Well, it's 2 o'clock. We'll go ahead and get started with the December 2023 meeting of the Johnson County Cemetery District. Open the floor for any public comment, should anyone have any. Okay, move on to the agenda. Chanda, make me aware that I used the wrong term when providing the agenda, so it needs to not be audit. It wasn't an audit, it was a review of our financial statements. So, as our accountant will let us know, that's not what. Got to use the right terms, I guess.
As our bookkeeper.
Yes, and our bookkeeper. But I think is our accountant. He should be on as well.
Michael's here.
Oh, he's input. That's well. Yes. Welcome. Yeah, thanks. So,
you're Michael.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
I've talked to you, Barbara.
Okay. Great. So anyone else have additions, changes to the agenda? If not, I would accept a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
As corrected. Yeah.
All right, a motion and a second. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
Who seconded?
Bob.
Okay, thanks. Sorry.
Then for those of us who had a chance to look over the vouchers, any questions, concerns, or a motion?
I move that we accept the vouchers.
I second.
Okay, motion and a second. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? All right, the minutes from the previous meeting are in your packet. Anyone have any additions, subtractions?
I think they're very comprehensive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They look good.
So I'll take that as a motion to approve.
I motion to approve.
Okay.
The report from Sean.
Minutes from the November.
I motion to approve the minutes from November meeting.
Okay.
Second.
Motion a second. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed. Okay, we can move into our financial treasurer's report.
Okay, that should be, I think, after the minutes in your packet. The first sheet is the balance sheet. You'll see there's now 3 investments from MBS, so we got all that money transferred. Hopefully I got it set up. You will see the earnings and the maturity dates on there as well. So the 22 comes due in August. The rest are in November. WildStar, I did not get that statement yet, so that interest rate is not accurate as of November. On the profit and loss detail, those are all the checks and the vouchers you just signed. So unless there's any questions or anything I need to reclassify, that should all be good. And then I think 4 pages later, we're at our budget versus actual. We are at 42% through the fiscal year as of November 30th. A couple line items, we are a little over or approaching 100%. Insurance, I was telling some of the folks earlier, it went up $2,000 compared to last year. So that's why that was budgeted a little bit low. The rest of these items, we were just slightly over 42%, except for the weed spraying, sad in KC, but that's only $30 that we're over. The other thing on there is the capital outlay in KC. That was for the building upgrades. You guys can handle that a couple different ways. You can just leave it there because your total capital outlay budget isn't over budget. You do have $40,000 in contingency budget. If you want to transfer that to Casey, so it's not a negative, but it's the board's call. It doesn't really matter what you do, just how you guys like to see the report.
Well, if we did transfer it to Casey, then it's easy enough to look back and say those were the total expenditures for Casey. Would that be the case? Would it be easier to look back that way?
It just doesn't show that you're over budget in that line item, is what it does. I mean, that number's not going to change, the 6,600.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't change the amount, but, but I was just saying, like, if I wanted to go back later and say, you know, what the budget in KC looked like for the year, would it be easier if we did transfer that money to KC, to that budget?
Not so much, because we're talking capital outlay instead of just expenditures.
Okay.
So it'll stay within that line item.
Yeah, that's fine too. I was wondering what would be easy to look back at it and understand.
And some boards prefer not to see a line item over budget, but it's however you guys.
Usually it's easier to explain if there's not a negative number associated with it.
I would provide some input month to month as I'm looking through where we're at. It helps me to know, I think, where we're at in KC as far as money and projects that are continuing through my portion of that. Okay. I like to see it corrected, but it's just because it helps me know where we're at financially.
Let's maybe hold off. You have a bid to present us on the KC Gate. I think we can talk about that, and we can just make one kind of transfer, that contingency fund in there maybe next month.
Good idea.
That's good.
Then I don't have anything else on the financials. I see you have the health insurance on there at a later point.
Yeah. Any questions? Sheila or Shanda?
No, I don't.
Okay. Although, is there a motion to approve the financials as presented?
I make a motion to approve the financials as they're presented.
I second it.
Okay. Motion is second. Any further discussion?
Okay.
All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Michael, welcome.
Hi. I'm Michael Johnson with Mohab Johnson Godwin, and we did the reviewed financial statement for you guys for this year that we have to have for to keep the state happy, keep the State Department of Audit happy in all that they have, all the paperwork that they have. I guess just to kind of give you guys a familiarity, there are different levels of services that, different levels of financial statements that can be presented, and we did a reviewed financial. An audit is much more expensive and much more involved. And actually, we as a firm and a lot of small firms don't do audits because of the requirements that go. There's a lot of professional requirements with them, and so a lot of small firms don't do them. You have to get somebody, a bigger firm like Casper or Billings or Denver or Rapid City, to generally do an audit. But a review, just so you know, a review is that we take, obviously we get the QuickBooks, Shanna gives us QuickBooks and she gives us all the bank statements and a lot of, you know, all the information that we then go through. And then we compare that, she gives us the budget, we compare it to the budget, much like you guys said, you guys look at your budgets every year, every month and say, okay, where is it at? We look at it on the annual basis and compare it to the budget that you guys had. And then we do go through and look at how things are categorized to make sure they're in the, you know, the proper line item, proper bucket, if you will, and as far as how things are recorded. And then at that point, you know, like say we look through those things and we prepare the financial statement, and a reviewed financial statement has footnotes with it, so you'll see that there's some extra pages. We have a page with numbers, but we also have several pages with notes that describes the entity, describes certain policies that the cemetery district has. And just outlines those in the reviewed financial statement. You're not required, so if you guys have had either expenditures or receipts of over $1 million, then at that point you would be required to have an audit. I would not recommend, if you're below that, to try and have one, because again, it's at least four times the cost to get it. And I think you have enough oversight and enough review of the work that you're, of the, you know, the bills and things that I don't know if that's necessary. Where you're under the million, you're not required by the state at all. If you were to also, if you receive federal funding, which you don't, yours is, you know, obviously all property taxes and that sort of thing. If an entity receives $750,000 in federal funding, they're required to have an audit then as well. But obviously that doesn't fit you guys, and the state is clearly states that as well, if that's what happens. And so our report, basically, that's what we describe, is that we're doing an audit, that we perform procedures, that management has taken responsibility for how things are posted, which is what you guys do every month when you, you know, go over the budget and look at how things are presented there, look at your financials when you sign off on the bills that you pay and that sort of thing. So you guys are taking responsibility for that. And that's what our report says, is that management's taking responsibility for what's going on. Then we go through and perform our procedures and say, okay, this is, you know, things are proper as to how they're presented. We did not have any changes or journal, you know, we didn't move anything, everything, and how this is how it's been for the last several years, is we, you know, everything is properly classified. You know, we didn't need to move something from one expense account to another because it was in the wrong expense account. Everything was how it should be that we looked at. I guess one thing, and you guys are up to date on this, and I'm sure you're very well aware of this, is that obviously with turnover on the board and different things with signatures, and you know, Janet's taking care of this, is obviously signature cards and bonding. You need to make sure that those things are all up to date as far as who's signing, if everybody's proper. And it doesn't have to be everybody who signs, but you need to list several people on it who are bonded, and then make sure that signature cards with the banker are properly up to date with that. Again, the financials you've seen, you know, monthly. Nothing is different. Nothing has changed as far as what you've had from your June financial. It's the budgets and the actuals are all the same. Nothing has changed there. In the footnotes, like I said, we described the entity some. Like we talked about with the, and then one of the footnotes is about cash, and where you guys, like this year, where you guys were able to, when I say, as of 6/30/23, you guys were able to move into some CDs and different things, obviously, where we have interest rates up, we're able to get those things. And again, the state requires FDIC insurance, and you guys met, you know, you're below the 250 threshold, so I mean, you guys met all those, you know, you're in compliance with what the state requires as far as what you're holding on those pieces. And then, the other piece is actually just, you know, we describe what your capital outlay, which you guys are aware of with the sprinkler upgrade and different things that you did last year. We have a footnote in there that talks about the Wyoming retirement system that you have for the employees. That's a required footnote. We have to disclose your insurance, what the coverage is. That's one of the footnotes that's in there. Describe that. And then one of the last things is subsequent events. Is that if there was something major to have happened, so if, you know, heaven forbid, something where there was a lawsuit or somebody was suing you for a large amount, or if somebody had, again, heaven forbid this happened, somebody had, you know, absconded with a bunch of money somehow, that would, you know, something major that financially impacts the entity needs to be disclosed. And again, there's nothing like that. It's a required piece that you would just basically say that there's, you know, nothing to disclose that's occurred after year end that needs to be in these. That's kind of how it, kind of everything in a brief summary, I guess. Do you have questions about the financial statement or what?
Nothing on the financial statement. Do you know when the last time an audit was done?
That I don't know.
Okay.
It's always been the last few years we had done it, had been a review, and the years, my understanding is several years before that, when Cloud Peak was doing it, it was just a review then as well. So
right.
I would, for sure, 6 years.
You guys did some extra work when I first came on.
And
it wasn't a full audit.
Well, yeah. So John asked us to come, to go through and look at, and we did look at some of those too, as far as signatures on the checks and those sorts of things. And so we did look at that again. And again, it's all, I mean, every, that's all good. Yes. And so we do a little bit extra beyond what you would term the scope or what's required to do a review. And so we do look at some of the things like with the bank statements, making sure there's signatures and those sorts of things. A review is a lot of what you would call analytical, more of comparing it to budget to actual and making sure that like your property tax, like your revenue meets, okay, does this meet the expectation that we have? Where obviously your property tax revenue is up because property values are up. And so, you know, it's more of a analytical approach. And yeah, so we looked at some things again. And again, it was, we reviewed the general ledger and looked at proper classifications of things. And looking at that is a little bit more noteworthy. And so we have done that, but it's, again, everything is how it should be. So with that, but yeah, like I said, an audit will go through, they'll dive more into your internal controls, okay, and they'll send out confirmations, and they'll, so like your banks, instead of us getting the bank statements, Jana, they would send a letter to the bank and ask them to confirm the balance, and they would do things like that. They'll do more interviews, they'll do more of those things, and again, I would not do it until you cross the $1 million threshold, because not to be critical of my own industry, but you don't need to pay an accountant extra money to do that, because I think, again, you have good internal controls. You guys are looking over things monthly. You're, you know, if things weren't being watched, I guess at that point maybe you could say maybe we need to have more oversight and bring someone in to do something, but I don't, you know, you have good oversight. It's like, I don't see it being necessary.
But we don't know when the last audit was done.
No, I have no idea.
And an audit is always a good starting point and lets everybody know, are we doing things correctly? I don't know, I leaning towards you, but I do think we need to take a look at doing an audit at some point, because it's been over 6 years. Audits are a good tool. Lets people realize some key items, or maybe you're doing things correctly. Now, with that said, I don't know how much more it costs. If we're talking, you know, if it's...
At least 25.
100?
25,000.
Oh, 25,000. Okay.
I would say it'd be at least... That's a rough guess. I would say it'd be at least 25, because they have to come in and they have to document your internal.
Right.
There's a lot of what we call front. There's a lot of paperwork to document.
They're digging into the details from a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
And how you execute about that. So because we are under that $1 million threshold, I think we would catch anything with these teams typically, but it is something to keep, you know, in the forethought. Audits can be good. They're painful, but they can be good. So.
Well, I'd like to thank Chanda for taking such good care of
my spot, too. So. Good job, Chanda.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I guess that's me next, then.
Well, so do we need a formal approval? So a motion to present the, or approve the financial review as presented.
I move that we accept the financial review as presented.
I'll second.
A motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
How often do we do this?
Annually.
Okay, I thought so. I just wanted to double check.
I think it might have been our first meeting last year.
Was it? Okay, it's all a blur. First few months. Okay.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yes.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, yes.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
All right, Sean, you're up.
All right, I'm going to keep brief today. So, let me just start by reading my 4-page letter to the board. No. So Real quick, I did mention last meeting about the Russian olive project that we were going to do our best attempt with Clear Creek Conservation District to eradicate the amount of Russian olive that we have on cemetery property. That price came in. It's a cost share. Put a copy of the contract in this meeting packet. And it's a 70-30 cost share, 70 them, 30 us, which is an excellent cost share. Usually they're 50-50. Our cemetery has approximately 3 acres in total of Russian olive, and our portion of that cost is going to be right around $3,300. I would hope the board would like to enter into that contract, and we do have a copy of it here to sign today if you would be happy to enter into that. I think it's we're really money ahead to do that.
So can we just pause for a moment and just get that taken care of? Someone want to make a motion to approve the signing of this contract?
Well, I have a couple questions before we do that. I do know there are quite a few individuals that live in Johnson County that don't agree with this, and they're worried about the wildlife and other creatures that use Russian olive. Now, I'm not sure how in-depth that is. I know that it's it's not a natural tree by any means, and so does anybody have any insight on how much?
Russian olive drinks 120 gallons of water a day.
Okay.
Your big cottonwoods out here drink 10 gallons.
Okay.
Their root system is what's in base. If it actually ruins watershed because they just overgrow and they dig in and they just repopulate faster than you can keep up. Our biggest issue that we're having right now is they're starting to show up all over inside the cemetery on top of that. So, you know, we're not going to be losing any more wildlife habitat because most of it comes from next door over just to feed during the night.
Right.
So we're not going to lose too much as far as that goes. So I know Sean and I talked following it back up with planting some aspen trees down along the creek and regrowing that to drown
they
them
might
out.
Be
or even cottonwoods.
Show up in your
or
cemetery too.
Pardon?
Aspen might show up in your cemetery too.
Yeah. Well, they don't take the amount of water.
Yeah.
And they don't tend to grow as rapid as these Russian
olives. Oh, Russian olives are just
and they're,
obnoxious.
You know, the thing with Russian olives is that the turkey eats the seed, the deer eats the seed, and that's how it becomes redistributed. Where, you know, aspens have a little more character in the fall, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're
beautiful.
From a conservation standpoint, I do like Russian olive. I love them. I think they're great for the wildlife, but I don't think they're great for the wildlife in the cemetery. I think that our county has enough Russian olive elsewhere that's going to provide that kind of habitat. So that's just my two cents.
Well, and we also live in a high desert, so believe it or not, water is precious in this area.
Certainly.
So if we
certainly
can do something to reduce that, by all means, we want to leverage that.
Can I speak on the agronomic
science
of this? I'm Patrick Munsell again. But it's going to become an invasive weed, too. They're going to sign it up as that, so you can't plant it. You're going to have to remove them or do something with it. So it's going to become that eventually. So the counties will take effect. It'll be in the whole state. But you see them all over. I always had it on my ranch.
Right.
Good windrows. They grow good. They grow fast. You know, it helps the smell move and all this jazz. But in something like this, is not a good call. Out in the wild, it's fine because it's getting natural water, and they survive off of that. But in here, I think it would be best to.
There's a native species that's very similar. If anyone, they're buffalo berries. We can, you know, if we're worried about wildlife habitat, we could do that. But Russian olives are just, they're awful. I'm ready to get rid of them.
They poke you too.
Yeah, they're not very friendly, are they?
I move that we accept the contract to remove the Russian olives.
I second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Great.
All right, my next item is the Casey Gate. Just trying to keep that right out in front of us here so that it doesn't end up on a back burner for the rest of the winter or the budget year. Contractor, Garen Fowler, he formerly worked out for Chris George at, I think it was Rocking Forge. But I can't remember Chris's business, but anyhow, Chris George's business out south. He had, Chris sold out, and so Garen, a young family man here in Buffalo, struck out on his own doing decorative metal art. He's kind of lighting the world on fire with it. Pardon the pun, if you're into forge work. He did make us a drawing. He went on site, he took some photos, he took measurements. This drawing in here that I added to the packet is, I think, what Donetti mostly asked for. She was not able to attend the meeting today for medical reasons. But as you see here, this is 3-inch pipe, basically. And it'll all be welded. It can be welded on site, or it can be prefabbed and put in place and then kind of finished on site. You have a 16-inch round, what they call kind of cap posts there, which gives it some good size appeal. It is 17 foot tall to make that a complete square. He kept the gate there off to the right. There's existing gate there right now, and I think that's a great idea to keep that
walk
there.
Through gate, yeah.
You bet. And this goes clear to the corner of the building to where the existing fence stops right now, where there's a T that kind of tie together there. So it would be all iron fencing there to there. It's heavy duty pipe. This thing will last the nuclear war or whatever. I mean, this thing will be here when we're not. He did not put into his price equipment rental because I told him that we might probably just be able to help him out with that. We have the equipment to go down and drill the holes and even do the removal of the old stuff for him.
We're looking north, right?
So yeah, you would be standing outside of the cemetery looking into it, and that's exactly how you would be looking at that. Now he's got his price of, or he's got his quantities of pipe here and what we're using on that. And there's a sign you see on the right upper side of this picture here. Really, that is all it's going to say is Casey Wyoming Cemetery, unless we want something else. And that's where I would like you guys to take this home and maybe put your own, you know, what you would like that to say on it. Or if there's somebody in KC or people in KC that want to comment on that, it's...
I'd like to see this a little more decorative than
right.
just a pipe fence.
So, and with that, that's where he has a range of $12,000 to $15,000 in his price, depending on how decorative we get this sign or if we increase the size of it. And if you turn off of his rough draft onto the next page there, I just thought, since there's a walking gate on one side, we can't do a lot there in that corner between the tall posts and the top rail. But on the other side, I think it's a good place for something additionally artsy, whether it was a wagon wheel or three crosses or, you know, a lone horse tied to the cap post, whatever ideas.
What about an arch going over the drive?
So an arch is good. We wanted to steer away from that at one point.
I didn't ask worried about a truck being
for trucking
there,
purposes.
But if you make it 17 foot.
Right. So fine. If we did 17 foot with an arch to it, it's even going to be higher yet. So
that's what I
okay. I think we should accept design ideas. They need a better sign than what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't like abbreviations.
Right. I didn't like that either.
Let people put out some.
Yep. So I guess moving forward, this has been presented to us as a working draft to kind of help us keep this
going,
getting
Thank
done.
You.
So I don't know that we need to take any action on that other than maybe take it home and do a little homework with it. some, but it's a food for thought
input.
Item. That kind of wraps up, other than Paul and I's regular duties that we've, you know, we've had several funerals, several full burials, putting the fall behind us now. We were able to complete all of the mulching, and the cemetery looked amazing before the snow came, and you know, I think it still looks amazing now. So moving into spring, I think we're going to be ahead of the game.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
You bet. So I guess I can move right on into maybe new business if everybody's okay with that.
What about Casey opening closing?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that one.
Yeah, so, I have a quick question. Is there a cattle guard that they have to go over to get into the cemetery?
No, they do a lot of, well, it's a ranching community, so they do a lot of horseback in and out of that cemetery. Perfect. So we try to stay off of the cattle guard situation.
Okay, that's cool to know. Wow.
Yeah, we've done several, you know, they'll come in with an empty horse and there's not a lot that'll break a guy to tears than seeing some poor mother's empty horse walking out of there. So it's an important part of that cemetery, and it's part of the ranching traditions down there that we want to darn sure keep intact.
Cool. Thank you.
And then, so the KC opening and closing, we've had a conversation with Scott Perringer with Road and Bridge, and he has told us that his tractor is always available to us. So if Bob Perry or Bob Perry's tractor is not available, as we talked about at the last meeting, Road and Bridge and their operator will help us make sure that that's always getting covered. So
very nice.
that's where Thanks. We're at on my end of that. If anybody else has anything to add to that.
No, I think that's great. I did see in Danette's notes, I can't find them.
Yeah.
She said she had to
hand dig,
yeah.
So that the reason that is, so that was for an infant's grave, and those are typically hand dug. Oh, and the cremation. So those are typically hand dug.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And I think she put that in a note there, just kind of,
to let us know what she was doing.
Yeah, she's, okay. You know, she's down. She's not just standing around down there. She's getting some stuff done. Yeah. So, and she's been excellent to work with. I'm really happy to work with her.
The only other thing is it, you know, that thing is built on a high hill and it gets all the wind. So it's kind of a constant thing with that flag. And I noticed that she went and got a flag.
I see that.
Maybe we should just get, you know, four of them and have them on hand there, because it is going to have to be changed more frequently than in other places.
I don't have any problem.
Same at my house. So.
Keeping one on hand. So that's opening and closing plan. That takes us to the new business, which I did add a, well, I'm sorry, I have one more item in here that I forgot to go over. We did visit, I think in the September meeting, about maybe revising or updating, reviewing work comp or overtime policy. I went to the county handbook to see what they're doing and talked to a couple of other departments, and I added that in here, kind of another homework maybe item. The sheriff's office is used as an example in this overtime compensation in the county handbook. They do 80 hours of comp time in lieu of overtime. They cap it at 80. You need to start using your comp time before you use your vacation or sick time first. It helps us, I think that it gives us some number control with budgets, and we are trying to be aware of overtime, and it is it's kind of a, it's an animal out here. You can't guess on Monday what you have coming on Saturday. A lot of the time, by the time a funeral rolls in for a Saturday, we might already be kind of looking towards the end of our hours for the week. So we're trying to just let you guys know we're mindful of that situation. We're looking for a solution. My preference and Paul's preference, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, or step in anywhere you want here. We would like to do more of a 40-hour cap, and we're wanting to look at overtime. And I've visited with Chanda about this. If we are able to look at overtime more on a monthly basis rather than a daily or a weekly basis, if we're able to do this legally under the Fair Labor Standards Act, that gives us more flex or more control of knowing at the end of the month where we are, if we have already tabulated enough hours where we're kind of working towards that overtime, we maybe are able to take some days off. I guess I'm asking you guys to take that home, think about it, see if you can come, maybe the next meeting we can visit that, about that. I put on the back side of that, for 2023, what kind of like a breakdown of hours are by the month when you're talking more, not shift work, and you're not necessarily 40-hour week, Monday through Friday either. Our pay scales are starting and ending sometimes in the middle of the week. It does mess with the amount of hours in the month, which would be considered full-time for the month. So it's kind of a complicated animal when you look at it that way. You would think it would be so simple as to say, well, 40 hours a week, 4 weeks in a month, it would be 160 hours would be full time. It just doesn't always compute that way. So that's where I've gotten with that. If anybody would like to have any input on that. If not, I'll just move right along here.
I need a little input.
Mm-hmm.
So in January of 2023, there were 176 total hours by employees.
No, so this isn't us. This is an example of.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So if you were to break these down, like the month of the years, you know, so this is last year. I don't have one for 2024, which would have made more sense, but it's kind of like, it's kind of a food homework idea, is that if you were to look at overtime by the month, because of the way the months start, whether that's a Monday mm-hmm. or whether it's a Friday, it kind of messes with that full-time picture. Chanda, I don't know if you have any input on what would be like the better way or a best way to go about payroll as far as overtime, if you have any input on that.
No. Sean and I talked briefly, and I thought that I read that overtime had to be by the week according to the labor standards. But what the documentation he has from the sheriff's office.
Right. The county handbook has stated that they're able to do it monthly.
Yeah, we do it. I mean, in the hospital world, we do it by 2 week period, so you can overlap on a, I mean, yeah, but it's still weekly, I guess, because you can overlap on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, if that makes sense, where your payroll is Sunday to Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so my understanding is you don't get overtime, or you're not required to pay overtime in Wyoming until you have more than 40 hours in any work week. So I think we want to make sure that we maintain that scope because it's the way the state does it. We know it's a 40-hour work week, 2,080 hours annually if you really want to dig into it. But I don't think we want to get away from what the state currently has in place as far as overtime goes. Then we just need to figure out how we want to measure that. Number two is I'm not a supporter of comp time unless it's to the employee's benefit. And Barb brought up a good example the last time is if somebody has to take excessive time off because of illness in the family, whether it's themselves, then yes, I would support comp time. I personally don't feel comp time is a benefit to the employees. Unless you have less than 1 week of vacation, then I can see what comp time would be a benefit because you could have more time off. But I'm going to be somebody that's going to support you pay overtime for the work that's done and for a multitude of reasons. But number one, it's a good measurement. We need to understand where and how much people are working. If we get to where we're over a certain percentage with overtime, then we're looking at we need headcount in here. The other thing is I'm not exactly sure how personal time is measured or how it's accounted within the state of Wyoming. I've seen scenarios where all people do is take comp time, and then when it comes to their vacation time, they basically end up getting paid out for it. I don't know if the state of Wyoming does that or not, but what you end up doing is adding additional expense to whatever entity that you're pulling that.
So you're saying that's a situation where you have both.
Correct.
Comp time and overtime.
Mm-hmm. So I really am going to always support we pay the employees for the hours they work. And if it's overtime pay, then we pay that. If we get into double time, well, we probably need to understand why are we getting into double time? What's going on? Is it a one-time scenario? Or is it something that looks like it's a pattern? So that's where my stance is, if that helps anybody in what they discuss. But I've just seen it work to a disadvantage.
Yeah, and I, as far as Paul and I are concerned, we'd go either way. Comp time, overtime, both. We just want there to not be a problem with budget numbers or us, you know, needing to be in overtime to get our jobs done. So we want, I guess, more than anything for you as board members and the community to know that we are mindful of that time. And we try not to abuse it.
And right. We don't like surprises.
Yeah.
You know, to sit down and look at the vouchers and go, oh.
Right. And that's kind of where I thought, you know, if we did some comp time to cap it at a lower number than what the other county agencies are doing so that you have more control over that. And then, it's basically you're capping it at a week, kind of where you're saying you're not getting into this excessive amount of comp time and then cashing in your vacation at the end of this time, use it or lose it situation. So I don't know. I just feel like whatever you guys come up with, Paul and I would be okay with. We just do want you to know that we're mindful and that when we do go into overtime, it carries a hint of guilt.
It shouldn't.
Well, I know it shouldn't, but it's the way it is. And,
one scenario Sean and I talked about, you cap it at 40 hours. For me, that's 4 days. Of work. Between him and I, we can keep track of that to make sure it's used up within the budget year. So if I'm still hanging on to 20 hours and it's June 1st, he's going to say, go, you're gone for a couple days. You're not going to be here. You're going to burn that time off. I've seen it go both ways. You know, you don't want to use it as a stockpile of money.
Right. It's not
a safe. Keeping those low hours keeps us a little bit more flexible in our time too, as long as, you know, I got to leave work early or whatever, I don't have to worry about, you know, getting into vacation time. It's just, I'm leaving an hour early today, I got comp time. So it worked, to me, it's beneficial. I've been around it for a long year, so I understand it pretty in depth.
And I've been on both sides.
See the pros and cons of it, but, you know, if you reach 40 hours and we need overtime, then, you know, it happens. But hopefully we're able to flex it off, but it all depends on what's going on out here that particular week. So, I mean, Sean and I could work here dusk to dawn 7 days a week and still never have everything done. So
oh, yeah, that's
it's a lot to do. So,
I think we do want to do whatever we do for the benefit of our employees. I think you're right to keep that in mind. I think that's really important. But sometimes that comp time can be a benefit to an employee too, where you just have that little bit of cushion, but we don't want to just have it.
We don't want you to get to take a month off.
In
October when you should be.
But if it was, you know, limited to a certain number of hours, but like you said, if you need to take off, you know, maybe you have to go to Sheridan to a doctor's appointment, well, that's going to take 2 or 3 hours. And then if you dip into vacation time, well, then pretty soon you don't really have vacation time for and sometimes we need vacation.
We always need vacation.
And so if you're using up your vacation time to do things like that, that comp time might breach that. So maybe what I'm going to say is
there's a blend in there somewhere, maybe.
Maybe bring a proposal that you think is really good.
All right. Paul and I probably will have something ready for the next meeting if you guys are willing to move forward with that.
Yeah, that's,
thank you.
Where did I see something about personal leave? Didn't I see something about
I think that's
leave?
In another conversation when we get down into health insurance. Oh, that was in the county one. So that's basically saying that before you take any of your vacation days or sick days, that you take your comp time first. That's a
so
that's a federal
there,
and
the,
that's an IRS
guideline. That's an IRS benefits package. There's personal leave that we get.
Per hour. Per hour you work or per day you work?
There's nine. After 90, you receive 8 hours. Each year thereafter, we'll receive 16 hours.
And that's to do the doctor's appointments. And I've got to go to
personal days.
Do some personal stuff here. So,
but 8 hours is one day. 16 hours is two. And my point, and I'm being especially sensitive because I live in KC, but you can't do anything in KC in 1 hour. You know, like if I needed to go to the bank to sign a piece of paper, you know, it's
but you're not going to be doing
2 hours. No, but if you happen to use, you know, it's not going to take very much time before that lead time is gone. So that's why I like comp. I like a little bit of comp time.
I think it's good. I guess I'd let you two work together to bring us something that you feel is beneficial to you, and we'll move on, because I know the elephant in the room that we're all just sitting on the edge of our chairs is that next one.
Yeah.
Got my fork ready. So I did add, I wrote a letter to the board members regarding the sprinkler system, the irrigation system. I don't know. I just added this into the packet so it can be on record, what my feelings are with it. And I think, in a nutshell, we know that it's going to cost certain X amount of dollars to have a contractor come in and do a system. It'll cost X amount of dollars to...
John, before we jump into like that portion of it, can we start at a little bit, I think... the history of how we got here and, you know, what the last maybe 5-10 years have looked like for this current system that we have, so we can kind of understand the problem that we're then going to work to try.
So we have a broken system currently. Moving back 5 years, I would say that was a kind of a semi-automated, semi-manual system. That it needs to be maintained by a human being in order for it to operate. The pumps need to be physically turned on. They don't run on pressure switches. Somebody has to be here to attend that. It's a PVC system. PVC has a shelf life. This system has reached a lot of this system, I should say, not all, but most of this system is kind of at the edge of that shelf life, as well as the wiring that was used to control the part of it that is automated. That wire is also towards the end of its shelf life. It has a lot of breaks, interruptions, lack of continuity through that electrical system. A lot of the system needs to be operated manually. Valves need to be opened manually. Some of those valves are missing. We're not able to locate them. Some of them are damaged. We're not sure in which fashion they're damaged, whether they're stuck closed, whether they're stuck open. Those big valves are, a lot of those are in our main lines. So it's part of that is why we're having troubles getting water up to these areas of the cemetery currently, because we don't know where the valves are. We don't know if they're open, we don't know if they're closed, we don't know what's broken, and we don't know how much of it is broken. I do know that there has been some freeze damage as well. So I guess that is this system, and a lot of that institutional knowledge is left with former sexton and deputy sextons that really did know that system. Megan and Tim knew that system, but even they, there was part of that system that was a mystery to even them, as far as where some of these valves were located.
I'm sure we have many different ages of parts.
We do. We have several systems put together to make one.
How old do you think some of these are?
Oh, my gosh. I know that. So when I was a young boy out here, they were still running the pipe that they had the birds on it, and it was, I can't remember. It's
is that the one where they moved around the
gated
pipes?
Pipe? Yeah, basically gated pipe. So I think I saw that disappear probably in the late 80s, maybe early 90s. So I'm thinking that probably, and I don't know for sure, but I would estimate that that was the time that this system was probably started to be put in, would be the late 80s, early 90s. And that's just a guess from my history here in Buffalo.
And I think one of the things that I would say is that, and I don't, you know, obviously none of us know the exact history of the recent past, but they recently put in a 6-inch repair line. Is that true? That
was, yeah, there's a large line over on the west side of the cemetery, and it's been told to me that that large of a line, they weren't able to even, with the current system, that pipe is too big with the hill that it's pushing the water up. I guess that's about as simple as I could put that. Tim came out, and we were visiting a little bit of sprinkler this fall. He says there's a line over there that's never even been turned on. Nobody knows where to turn it on. There's an additional line that's been put in to feed some of that additional portion of the cemetery. Nobody knows where that valve is. That was just per conversation in the shop. We didn't go out and look for it, kick around or any of that, but he says there is one line out there that was installed that's never been turned on. Nobody knows how to turn that one on. It's probably the best line we have.
Well, the question I have is, are we 100% at the pump houses to ensure that we can start implementing this automation that we're trying to do, like all the filtering systems working correctly?
So are
there going to, you know, things around the pump houses, hoping that expense has already been resolved or close to it?
Our pumps and the filtration systems are in great shape. There's nothing wrong, Patrick. The filtration system has never really been used. So that does need to be integrated into the pump system and into the irrigation system. Even though it's all installed per design, it's not been used. We still need to turn it on. We need to use it. So there's going to be some additional work that needs to be done in those pump houses, but everything is there.
Okay.
What do you mean, kind of?
Okay, my turn.
This is
distributors. And that was a great meeting so far. I brought this up last time we spoke, Lucas, and you guys are hitting all in the same spots. It's probably 20 years old. Pump station's newer than that. Pump's a little older. Filtration's, we actually sold to you 15 years ago, but it hadn't been hooked up correctly. So the pump station is, and I've talked to Amia, the same sales guy still works there. Mm-hmm. That builds these filtrations. He knows it's not working right. So the problem is, it starts with the pump house. If you don't have water movement, you're not going to get to sprinklers, okay? So you look at how do you get water movement? And we'll start just real basic. A proper working irrigation system is key to proper maintenance. And that I don't think I've seen yet, from what I've seen down there. And this will help your green space. If everything's working right, everything looks good. While it is important to service the existing one, it's also an important to look at upgrades. You know, every season, what, you know, what's failing, what's it, the identification all the way through it hasn't been done. And if you guys schedule that and work even now with this system, you can't get water out there. It stops in certain areas. I've spent days finding sprinklers that are buried this deep. That means they're not watering. That means you're leaking water. So you're allotment of water. So what you're going to eventually move into is water savings 100%. You can use a third of the water you use now to maybe half. Just because it's draining off. It's leaching out. It's losing it before it even gets there. So that means a lot of your root systems and your arbor systems on the trees aren't where they should be. You know, so you lose in two ways. It's not only with the grass and the green fields, it's all your arbors and add new trees and take it away. So this system will, right now it uses too much water. It'll decrease the use of water. So your pump station's down here, it doesn't communicate. So you're gonna need another start box. So your communication can communicate up with your water system. It's pretty standard, you guys might even have it at home. Turn on, you don't even worry about the sprinklers coming out. Well, me, I drag a sprinkler, so it does matter. And then, so we start at the pump house and we move forward. Do we have the right valves in spot? The valves we started out here won't even turn on because all the cable going through it, your line, it's gray. I mean, it's gotten wet, so it's no good anymore. So it can't communicate. So your controller at the box will not work because it doesn't know what to do. There's nothing to turn on. You've got every head out there is a problem. Now we got some of the heads to turn on down here in whatever June, July. You guys are blessed. You got a lot of water, and so did Casper and everything else. I'm not a Casper, by the way, but I come up here a lot. I cover the whole state and part of Montana and South Dakota. This is a common problem, guys. Especially on cemeteries. It's because there's some rollovers and then nothing happens, then it just gets by, and then, oh, I didn't know it leaked there, and maintenance. It's simply done if you got forward movement on training and knowledge every day on what should be happening. Then they can check off these lists. Boom, 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 boom. So scheduling is a big deal. And the age of the system is too old. This PVC that's in the ground is broken.
But why do I read on PVC that it should have an in use of over 100 years? But yet we're coming back and saying all our PVC is all cracked.
You've got
roots
out there that have probably broken half of those.
Okay, so it's probably not due to age, but neglect over the years.
It's age and settling, so that PVC doesn't give. It cracks. And it happens in regular yards. It's just happened. They shear off, or you've got a head that's bad, then you replace the head and you crack it. So then you got to cut it back. So there's nowadays there is a better way to do it besides PVC, and it's faster.
What is it?
It's HDPE, which is a poly pipe.
Is it high density poly?
It's high density. It's thicker. It'll last longer. It won't disintegrate. It just lasts longer. It's what everything is going to in the government wise. And what I'm going through now is just notes I've made to discuss what should be the right time. But with all these trees and the arbor systems you have out here, that is probably a big problem. Because they come through, whether they go through a pipe or they're cracking. They'll go through cast iron. You know, look at the old days of cracking pipes and different yards. So it's a big issue. Where I would start looking at resource-wise, why do we need to do this? Well, it's that time. Can it wait another year? If you got the rain and the snow, you bet. If not, yes, there's a way to do a hose. You can hose everything and do it that way, you know. There's ways to get around updating. It's not the right way, but there is ways around. Now, looking forward, how do you save money? How do you save money by spending money? Okay? There's grants. We can save money by grants because you're going to go into a water conservation. Right now, you don't have water conservation. You use the water you're allotted better. And that'll leave you for expansion up top if you ever need that because you already have the water and you know what your usage is. Right now, you don't know what your usage is. I don't know. Do you guys meter the water coming in here?
No, it's not metered, but it is. There's a ditch rider gate. That gates it.
Yeah, but the gate, from what I've seen, you just throw it in there and suck it out.
Yep. That's how it's designed.
And then it goes out to somebody else from here?
Yep. Goes downstream and it goes
down. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure.
The high school, really, is the next
one. Yeah, so I used to have a ranch and farm and all this, so pivots and pumps, and that's what we do. So right now, we can save you on the filtration. You're not going to have all these clogged heads. Half the problem out here is there's so much dirt in the line and through the lines that those heads have clogged years ago. And they're bent and broke and ran over and everything else. And it can't be fixed, guys. You can fix it right now, but it's going to cost you more money to do it. Because it's going to, you know, you're going to have to dig up every head. You don't have a plan for that. You have no idea where everything is.
Well, that's just it. We don't know where stuff is.
No, and that's the problem, because we tried to find half of them. I spent days up here. Mm-hmm. It was mostly just eating bananas in the, under the trees. But so longevity on the piping if you go through it. So what I'll hit at now we know it's in a disarray. Okay, so it is an opportunity to upgrade. It's got to start with the pump houses. Overall, the pump houses are pretty good. You're going to have a new control system that'll communicate with the system you put in. So it'll be automated. It's not manual, it's automated. The only manual thing is that you're overlooking it. So you can go that way. The filtration, well, I'll help them take the filtration apart. I'll get a rep up here. We'll go through the filtration. Shouldn't be anything wrong with the filtration.